You're listening to a Classic Business Podcast, as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
One of the most gut-wrenching casualties of this pandemic has been the hospitality and restaurant industry. And there are obviously numbers that support that, but they don't tell the full story. Restaurants have a cultural imprint on what it means to be human. Restaurants are this place of connection and community, of excitement and decadence. That's a very powerful force. It's where we gather to celebrate, to mark milestones, to do deals and build relationships. And to have had them shuttered for months and then shackled when they came out of this pandemic, I fear it'll be very difficult to bring them back successfully. I worked in restaurants all over Melville to pay my way through varsity, the likes of the Pomegranate, Mezzaluna, Rats, and they all hold a very special place in my heart. It's dire for diners and waiters and chefs and restaurant owners alike. And news that a newly formed consortium of South Africa's biggest food service suppliers, namely Unilever Food Solutions, RCL Food Partners, McCain Food Services and Tiger Brands Out of Home, have partnered with leading food service distributor Bidfood to really pool resources in an effort to support the restoration of the industry, helped lift my spirits last week. And then on Friday morning, the police decided to use water cannons and stun grenades on peaceful protesters in Cape Town, and much of my hope withered away. I'm joined now by Janine Van Rooyen, MD of Unilever Food Solutions, Katharina Bester, Marketing Manager for McCain Food Services, Stuart Jones, Customer Executive at RCL Foods, and Grace Harding from the Restaurant Collective and CE of Ocean Basket. Grace, kick us off. Your reaction to this police brutality that we saw on Friday morning?
Well, it's totally unacceptable, isn't it? And you wonder what they were thinking, but it cannot go ignored. It's unacceptable. And the first time I actually heard about it was when you shared it with us. And it's disappointing because yesterday was really peaceful. Some police removed a few tables and chairs, but there was certainly no force. So once again, police brutality in the spotlight. Not good.
Not good at all, especially when you've got a government that seemingly is just paying lip service to supporting SMMEs through this crisis, if that's the way they're going to be treated. Now, Grace, StatsSA released the numbers on Tuesday, and it really is, it's a bloodbath. We saw accommodation in the tourism industry down 98%, income in the food and beverage industry down almost 88%. What impact has the lockdown had on Ocean Basket in particular?
So the figures are all quite similar. When deliveries was introduced, Ocean Basket was doing bits and pieces, and then takeaways were introduced. So it's been dripping in, but I think sit-down restaurants will struggle to make a living out of any other business model. And we have seen some sit-down restaurants really trying to innovate to keep people employed and to keep the doors open. They've tried frozen meals. They've tried to up the delivery takeaway game. But if you think of true restaurants that are a treat, it's not easy to enjoy a beautiful platter filled with prawns and mussels or a delicious steak in a takeaway box. So on average, I would say restaurants are down about 70%.
70% on average. Tell me a little bit more about the Restaurant Collective and who you are in terms of this partnership that has now been formed with the food services industry.
So at the end of March, April, when the lockdown happened, Natasha Sedaris from Tasha's and I just got together one day and had a chat like two girls do. And we said the sit-down restaurant industry is a little bit like the lost child amongst restaurants. You know, if you look at the takeaway industry, they really are slick. They collaborate well. McDonald's, Nando's, KFC, the systems are good. They're in place. And the sit-down restaurant industry is really hell of a fragmented because you've got everything from a beautiful restaurant like a Saint or a Marble or something like that to a little restaurant in a small town like Bathurst. So it's a very diverse segment of the SME industry and the restaurant industry. And our overall aim was really to start to uplift the industry. So obviously during lockdown, we fought hard to reopen. We ran workshops. We've given protocol training. And then through this, we were so lucky to meet Stuart and other people from Bitfood and Katharina, who's one of our suppliers, actually. We buy chips from them. And then we started to get together, and it was incredible to see how suppliers really, you know, came to the party and said, what can we do to help you?
Because the ecosystem is all interconnected. On that point, Katerina, I'd just like to bring you in here from McCain Food Services' perspective. And as Gray said, you supply ready-cut chips and vegetables and that sort of thing into the industry. What sort of impact have you seen, both in your inbound and outbound supply chain?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, thank you, Michael. The one thing that this pandemic has highlighted is exactly that interconnectivity and how vital the value chain is across the restaurant industry, because the impact is down from the farm worker, the logistics driver, the delivery person, the cleaning staff. So there's a whole myriad of people in the value chain that is impacted by the fact that our restaurants aren't able to open. McCain is predominantly a food service industry. We have a retail business, but it's not the majority of our business. And we have had almost 70% of our turnover reduced in the hard lockdown. And you know, potatoes don't stop growing, peas don't stop growing. We still have to harvest, we still have to pay farmers, we still have to support our farming communities. The factories need to continue to run, otherwise we have the risk of you know, dumping that produce that is available to use on the side. So it's put huge financial strain on us in terms of making sure that we still do good in the communities that we operate in and that we provide livelihood to our farmers and our communities. You know, and we've certainly tried many avenues in terms of donating food, but at the same time, at the end of the day, we need to get back to business. We need to get the restaurant industry open and trading, because there are so many people that are reliant on the livelihoods of the restaurant trade.
And Stuart, to that point, we see in the poultry sector, it's clucking tough at the moment. We see a lot of that build up in the supply and logistics chain as well. You can't just stop the broilers from growing chicks. What impact have you seen in RCL's business? And we've certainly seen the impact most acutely felt in the QSR space. But just broadly speaking, what impact has the shutdown had on RCL?
Yeah, the initial shutdown when takeaway and delivery wasn't allowed was obviously extremely severe, as you said, to keep coming. And so you end up filling a lot of storage space. But obviously, takeaway and collection and delivery have been allowed now for a few weeks. And the QSR sector appears to be picking up quite nicely. The sit-down restaurant sector is still the sector that is most drastically affected, 60 to 80% different chains down. QSR sector has picked up and is performing quite well with the other outlets being closed.
Janine, looking at the food services industry and restaurants, whether they're in hotels or standalones, obviously critical here. What has the impact been from Unilever's perspective?
Yeah, so Michael, very similar to Katerina and Stuart. So I think when we had the full hard lockdown and not allowing any takeaways or sit-ins across both restaurants and the full hospitality industry, we saw a huge decline, obviously, in terms of sales. So also down around 80%, 70%. And similar to Stuart's comment, we are seeing, obviously, your QSRs have picked up a lot quicker. But where we're really seeing the pain being felt is through the restaurants and obviously your hotels as well. And I think for us, our big concern is when we actually look at, as Katerina mentioned, the full value chain being around 1.8 million people could stand to actually lose their jobs if we don't bounce this back and if we don't stimulate demand and if we actually don't start getting diners safely back out there supporting these establishments.
And that's an important point you raise. Grace, I want to come back to you on that issue of diners returning safely. We had Trade Union Kasatu saying not too long ago that they were very concerned about the safety of workers in kitchens and also of people coming back to sit-down restaurants, saying they're potentially breeding grounds for COVID-19. How do you respond to that? How have restaurants, and you say you've designed a toolkit, responded to make sure that diners can return safely?
So the World Health Organization put out the protocols many, many weeks ago. And what's interesting is there are no statistics that have shown that restaurants are particular dangerous hotspots. So it's the same principles: distance, social distancing, sanitizing, hand washing. What you assume is that the people who come to eat together are people who are usually together and they sit at the same table, so they'll take off their masks. And then the distance between one table and the next is 1.5 meters. In the back, the staff are wearing masks, our grillers and cooks, they are getting used to working with masks, they are getting used to having to hear each other because they go to call out orders. So where is it 100% safe? I mean, I stand in a supermarket queue a meter away from someone. So all the precautions are being taken, and I think the guests are particularly safe with the staff. We've marked the floors so they can see the distance, and we've made sure that the kitchens do have the distance, and we've also reduced the menus. So fewer items means less chaos in terms of preparation and any opportunity of having to sit next to each other.
The point as well is that consumers are afraid. There is a natural tendency towards fear in an environment like this. And what we see in the UK is they've realized this and they're trying to stimulate demand. Whereas here in South Africa, we still seem to be trying to put a further handbrake on demand. Stuart, tell me a little bit more about this consortium and how you actually plan to assist the restaurant and food services industry to get through this period, because most epidemiologists reckon that we're still at least a year away from any kind of vaccine. So if there isn't support over the next 12 months, many of these restaurants will just cease to exist.
No, look, right from the start, we obviously saw what was going on globally and locally and felt that we had to act to do more over the long term. So we got together and committed to a 12 to 18 month relationship where we are going to work and focus on building consumer demand again. So on the basis of firstly getting open safely and safety coming first, We committed to sharing that and making sure as many stores as possible adhere to the regulations and provide a safe environment. But on top of that, we've created a campaign, which is the first of a number of messages that we'll be putting out there, which is called One Meal, Many Thanks. And it's simply a thank you to the consumers for actually participating in the channel in whatever form, whether it's a takeout, a delivery, or a sit down. It's thanking them for participating. It's not being aggressive and aggressively driving people out there too early. It's taking a measured approach. The consumer behavior has changed and will be changed in the long term. The government in the UK has gone so far as to reducing VAT for a period of time. That kind of thing would be absolutely fantastic if our governments could follow suit, because it would really help and would encourage people back. But it's obviously quite a costly exercise. We've produced material for all independents and chains to share with their customers for free to start building this thank you relationship for saving jobs and saving the jobs. Each meal you order touches 28 lives. And that's what we want to say thank you for. And we're going to build on that in further executions going forward.
Take me through the thinking behind this route to market and the creative approach that underpins this campaign.
Yeah, no problem. Look, obviously, consumers are scared to go back, particularly into the sit-down arena. And one of the original thoughts was to tackle that fear directly. Unfortunately, we've steered clear of that for two reasons. One, if you talk about fear, you amplify fear. Secondly, we need to give the restaurants time to prove that they are behaving safely and they are adhering to all of these rules. And we're working on a certification process with the TBCSA and the global travel organizations to try and get people to behave in that safe way and guarantee that safety before we talk directly to fear. We also could have talked about fun, but a fun message, because restaurants are fun, and that's what we need to get back into people's psyche, that going out is fun. But again, that's not the appropriate message for the time. So we've focused on gratitude and humanization of the channel, and this focus around the number of livelihoods that are being affected, and gratitude for those that are helping during this time.
On that point, Katerina, when we look at the size of the industry, and I think you mentioned earlier 1.8 million jobs are on the line here, it just demonstrates the importance of restaurants to local economies. Does more need to be done lobbying on this particular message? Because it is one industry that doesn't seem to be getting the high level support when we hear the president address the nation week in and week out. It doesn't seem to be getting the kind of support that we need from policymakers right now.
No, absolutely. You're totally right in that. The problem is it's such a diverse and fragmented industry. So, you know, we certainly hope by coming together as the big manufacturers in the food service industry, we are able to start building momentum behind the plight of the restaurant industry. And, you know, initially it was just the five of us getting together and having conversations of what we can do. And obviously the first output of this is the One Meal Many Thanks campaign. But as we you know, present to more and more people and more customers, we're certainly getting input and steer from a lot of organizations and industry bodies. So we hope that as we mature on this journey that we are on, we would be able to start adding tangible benefit to the food service industry in the form of, you know, anything up to helping to negotiate better rates for delivery aggregators back to restaurants, lobbying government in support of a stimulus program or relaxing of the lockdown regulations. But right now our focus is around just building gratitude and awareness with consumers in a positive way. But that's certainly in our long-term view to see what else can we do, because we definitely need a unified voice in this, that the other players in the restaurant industry will see that what we are trying to do is trying to build a better South Africa and change the narrative into one where we get South Africans behind us, and in so doing add pressure onto governing bodies and other organizations to change certain attitudes in order to help the restaurant industry.
And on that idea of gratitude, it's been interesting to see Chefs with Compassion come out, and these are chefs that haven't been able to earn an income during lockdown, giving of their time, giving of their kitchens, supporting soup kitchens, helping with the national feeding scheme at the moment, and really giving very selflessly at this time. Yet we've seen very little back from government. Grace, and I want to come back to this point, because government does have a role in this, and it's seemingly impervious to the devastation being wreaked on the industry. We have a continued curfew and a continued ban on the sale of alcohol. These are important components of the sit-down restaurant model. People finish work at a certain time. If there's a curfew, you're seriously not going to go out and sit down. You're going to order a takeaway meal. What is being done from your perspective to ensure that these changes are made to help support the industry?
Well, I think we're caught between a rock and a hard place, because it doesn't look like the government is prepared to budge. So there's a few regulations that don't make sense. And if you look worldwide, restaurants, when they've been opened, and besides the odd, weird story somewhere in Texas where there was a pub where everyone went crazy and they closed them for a while, there hasn't been any danger in restaurants. But as you said earlier, the frustration is in not being heard. And I think that's why restaurateurs protested and took their tables outside and their chairs outside. When you feel ignored and invisible, what do you do? Mm. So we are working with the government. We submit proposals. We submit letters to the president. I mean, the restaurant collective submitted a letter to say, cool, you know, you're not going to do the 50% off the meals like the UK, but give us some VAT relief for at least a year. Help us help ourselves. We don't want handouts, but we want to be acknowledged and collaborated with. So we do speak via the relevant channels to ministers. It's not working yet, and we'll continue doing it. Some days I think we just have to hold on.
There's some restaurateurs I've spoken to, some winemakers as well, who are pretty gutful, who've taken the government to court. Others saying that the industry should just take the taxi approach. They seem to have got what they were looking for. I'd obviously say that tongue in cheek. Janine, from an industry perspective here, what else can be done to help support restaurants at this time? It was encouraging to see yesterday, at least, Ralph Havermann of Treasury talk about the adjustment to the 200 billion rand loan guarantee scheme. And the fact that those terms and conditions have now been eased, the lending criteria have been relaxed somewhat, and you can now use these funds for a restart option. And I think in particular for a restaurant, there's a good case to be made here for a restaurant to use these funds to bolster takeout and other areas of their business. So it does look like there are pockets here of opportunity to help the restaurant industry.
Absolutely, and I think as a consortium, we have looked at pooling together our resources, and also we've separately also put a lot of material together, which is available on all our platforms to actually help restaurants transform their business models so that they can actually deliver and you know, do other things within the restaurant to generate income. But I think as a consortium, we have really tried to see, you know, how can we help and support our restaurateurs in this crazy new normal. And I think for us, what we can do is really just to spread the message far and wide, this message of gratitude, and that by every meal someone orders or eats within a restaurant, the number of lives and jobs that they actually end up saving. And I think the great thing about the campaign, One Meal, Many Thanks, is that it literally can go as far and wide as possible. We have all the content and material available for any restaurant or any hospitality partner to download and use and spread the message. And we just encourage as many people to jump on board with us. We want to get the message out there because at the end of the day, you know, bums in seats or as many extra meals as our restaurateurs and that can sell is going to help us to keep the industry going through this very, very tough time.
It's an important message because I think many viewers will be sitting at home wondering how can they help? How can they help their local? And as I said in my introduction, those local restaurants are woven into the fabric of many suburbs around the country, and very sad to see some institutions closing their doors. And I think it really taps into that theme, Stuart.
Yeah, look, we've all got our local communities and our local restaurants, and that's what we're all in it for. The food service industry is almost like a family. Everybody cares about everybody else, and it's a very personal thing. The one thing that you can all do is just buy one more meal. Support the guys that are open and help them as they get open. Whichever you feel comfortable with, getting dine in or taking a takeout or getting a delivery, whichever way you feel comfortable, just have one more meal and help out one more operator, and keep these guys alive. Look, the relaxations on the financial rules, etc., on who can apply for what are great, and you know, they are a step forward. But at the end of the day, without meals returning, these businesses won't survive. They need your help one meal at a time.
Grace, just to come back to what further support and relief you're looking for as an industry, we mentioned the UK example, and they've effectively subsidised diners to go out and stimulate demand that way. What else are you asking for in order to support small restaurants and operators around the country?
Yeah, so in our letter, and I'm just going to quote it, we spoke about a reduction of VAT. We looked at a 5% reduction. We've asked for further deferment of some of the PAYE payments because there was temporary deferment. We've asked them to work with the banks to look at different rates and charging different credit card rates and even cash deposit. If we look at restaurants that are in townships, for example, they work with a lot of cash and the banks charge for cash deposits. Continue PAYE deferments and provide an incentive claim system to aid long-term ability of entrepreneurs to employ people without shouldering tax burdens, collaborate with financial institutions and perhaps even help with landlords in some instances. And then also to create the qualifying criteria online for more relief. So you spoke about the additional money that's going to be made available. And what we ask for is there any way that we can collaborate and form a small team? Because it's not always clear on what the criteria are and what makes you qualify or not.
And it's all about urgency as well. With so many restaurants closing their doors just in the last few weeks, it shows you that many went into this crisis without the runway, without the balance sheets to be able to withstand months and months on end without the sort of revenue that they were enjoying before this crisis. So I think on that point, we're going to have to end it there. It's a great campaign to show gratitude to South Africans for supporting small restaurants, big restaurants, whatever size restaurants. Just get out there and support these SMEs through a time of crisis. And let's hope that government comes to its senses around the curfew and some of those restrictions as well. Thank you very much to Janine van Rooyen, MD of Unilever Food Solutions, Katharina Bester, Marketing Manager of McCain Food Services, Stuart Jones, Customer Executive at RCL Foods, and Grace Harding from the Restaurant Collective.